Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on Samach Zayin Amud Aleph. The Mishnah begins, a mocher et hachatzer, someone who sells a chatzer. The Mishnah here is a continuation of what we've seen earlier in the Perek, which is a mocher et habayit, someone who sells a house. Now here, instead of selling a house and trying to figure out what's included in that terminology of selling the house or what is inclusive in the sale of a house, here the Mishnah moves to discuss what is included in a chatzer. And as the Rashbam points out, that stam, Machar batim tuchim lechatzer uborot shechim me'orot shebetoch habayit. That a person, when they sell a chatzer, it doesn't simply sell the courtyard. They sell the items that are attached or utilized together with the chatzer. And that means the things that are enumerated here in the Mishnah, which is machar batim, you sell the houses that open up into the chatzer, borot shechim me'orot, and the different forms of water capture that are used inside of the chatzer. The Rashbam here notes as well that it includes also the water capture mechanisms in the house itself. Even though they're in the house and they are not in the chatzer, they're included in the utility of the chatzer. And even though, as the Rashbam points out, that someone who sells a house does not include these items, but to the chatzer, they are batel. That's for one of two reasons here. Either you say that the utility of these items is connected to the chatzer in particular. For instance, the water capture mechanisms are used for laundry, for drawing water for drinking, and all of that activity is done in the chatzer, and therefore they're considered to be a part and parcel of the chatzer. Or you have to say that the chatzer is significant enough that these items are subsumed under the category of chatzer. For one of those two reasons, even though these items are not included when you sell a house, they are included when you do sell the chatzer. Avalo et mitaltelim. Just like by the bayit, when you sold the bayit, the metaltalim were not included. Over here too, the metaltalim are not included. The Rashbam over here makes a distinction between those things that are mechubar, those things that are attached, or that are kavua in the chatzer, versus things that are metaltel, things that are moved around. And those items are not included in the sale, because they are not considered to be tashmishei bayit or tashmishei chatzer, and therefore they're not included or subsumed under the sale. And similar to by the bayit, where you use this extraneous lashon, which says that everything that is inside of the house is included, so too over here, if you say everything that's inside of the chatzer is included, all of these items are included, including the metaltalin, not just the items that are kavua or fixed or part and parcel of the chatzer or the bayit, but even the metaltalin will be included over here, although it's only things that are connected to the utility of the chatzer or the bayit, things like the furniture and items that are connected particularly to the use of the bayit or to the chatzer, but not any type of metaltalim. But when you're talking about the items like food that is stored there or things that are stored that are not a part of the utility of the area, but metaltalim that are not directly connected to the bayit or the chatzer, they would not be subsumed under such a sale. Ben kach, uben kach, no matter which language is used, lo machar lo et amerchatz, what is not included in the sale of the chatzer is the bathhouse, lo beit habad, and not the olive press, shebetocha. Even if they're found in the chatzer, they're still considered to be significant enough or distinct enough that we wouldn't include them in this sale. V'lezo omer, amocher te chatzer, someone who sells a courtyard or chatzer, lo machar ela virah shel chatzer. They only sold the airspace of the chatzer, but they didn't sell anything along with the chatzer. They sell the utility of that airspace, but not any other item that we have mentioned above in the Mishnah that would have been included in the sale of a chatzer. Tan Rabbanan, Hamocher et hachatzer, machar batim hachitzonim, ubatim hapnimim. The person who sells a chatzer, included in that sale, is both the outer houses and the inner houses. The outer houses are houses that exit directly into the chatzer. The inner houses are houses that are captive to the outer houses, so they don't have a direct access to the chatzer, but they are considered to be the houses of the chatzer, and therefore they're included in the sale. Uveita chusaot, and included in the sale is also these beita chusaot. If you look in the Rashbam, he brings an explanation of chusaot from the Rabbeinu Chananel, which is karkash afrochol. It's an area where it is made of sand. It is sand that is used in the making of glass. On the other hand, if you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he explains that beita chusaot is smaim, kamot sunama. It is like bedrock or certain sort of rocks, the chashiv, that are significant in and of themselves, and therefore they are considered to be distinct. Both from what the Rashbam says as well as the Rabbeinu Gershom, seems to be that they are indicating that the Beit HaChusaot is actually segregated or separate and does not go along with the Chatzer. And therefore, the gears that we have in our Gemara shows the Braita saying that Beit HaChutzot are subsumed under the sale. But according to them, the Beit HaChutzot would be considered significant enough that they would have been distinct from the sale and not included in the sale, based on the explanations that both of them give, that these items are so chashuv that they get a standing on their own, unless they're trying to indicate that despite the fact that they are unique or they have their own standing, they're still subsumed under the sale. Chaniyot ptuchot l'tocha nimkarot ima. Any storefronts that are open into the chatzer, then they are included in the sale of the chatzer. Shein b'tuchot l'tocha nimkarot ima. On the other hand, stores that open out to the Rishut Rabim and not into the chatzer itself, they are not included in the sale. Tuchot l'kan l'kan, if they have an ability to access them both from the chatzer and the Rishut Rabim, then the girsa here is either to leave out the words of elu v'elu, or to say harei elu nimkarot ima. They are included in the sale because of the fact that they have access to the chatzer, or that their utility comes through the chatzer. Obviously, if they open into the chatzer, then their primary usage is by the bnei chatzer. As the Rashbam notes, that when the chanuyot are open into the chatzer, the assumption is that the primary users of the chanuyot are the people of the chatzer, and that's why it's subsumed under the chatzer, even though you could argue that the opening of the chanut into the chatzer just means you have to access the chanut through the chatzer, and therefore it makes it a subsidiary of the chatzer, and that's why it's included in the sale. You have alternate access to the Rishut HaRabim, then it's not necessarily connected directly to the chatzer, although here the Braita seems to indicate if you have access from both sides, both from the chatzer and the Rishut HaRabim, that we do include it in the sale of the chatzer. We'll see that there is an alternate view that maybe it should not be included in the sale of the chatzer. In all these instances, the Rashbam notes that v'damim modim like l'meimar. We can't say that the price that is paid here will determine what is being sold. Obviously, the more that's included, the higher the price. And so through the price, you should be able to determine what exactly was sold. But as we've noted before, the eno na the karkot. Rashbam l'shitato, who mentioned before the same problem, which is that since there's no ona ala karkaot, you can't make any determination based on price. Price is very subjective. We saw before the Baal Tosafot rejected this view of the Rashbam because they say that ein ona ala karkaot is a gzerat katuv, but they say something of a similar vein, which is that the price of karka is very subjective. It's very personal. And therefore, you can't tell from the price of the karka itself as to what is being sold in these cases. And that's why the Gemara doesn't bring up the possibility of looking at the price in any of these instances. It's just saying what is or is not included in a standard sale of these items. Someone who sells a chatzer is only selling the airspace, more than milusa, is synonymous with what we saw in the Mishnah, which is the avir chatzer, and it means that you just sold what is in the chatzer, the airspace or utility of the chatzer, but you didn't sell any of these other items that go along with it. Amar, so now the Gemara goes back to discuss in the Braita the case of Tuchot Dekan Lekan, when you have stores that open both to the Chatzer and the Rishut HaRabim, Nimkarot Ima, they are sold along with the Chatzer. V'ha'atani Rabbi Chia, we have an alternate Braita by Rabbi Chia that says, Ein Nimkarot Ima, that they do not get sold along with the Chatzer. It says, Lokasha, ha, derov tashmitayu legav, ha, derov tashmitayu lebar, depends on where their primary usage is. If the primary usage is outward-facing, meaning through the door that comes to the Rishut HaRabim, then they are not classified as being a part and parcel of the chatzer. On the other hand, if their primary use is from the gav, on the internal side, meaning towards the chatzer side, then they are classified as being a part and parcel of the chatzer. So having doors open to both sides just opens the possibility that it could be considered to be a part and parcel of the chatzer. Then you have to look at what is the primary access to the chanut. Is it through the chatzer? Is it through the Rishut HaRabim? And that will determine whether the chanut, it really belongs to the chatzer, or does not belong to the chatzer, and is more connected to the Rishut HaRabim. Someone who sells a chatzer is only selling the utility of the chatzer itself, but none of these other items. Amar Rabba is the girsa that we have in our Gemara, but you can see in the Ot Bet and throughout the Sugya that there's an alternate girsa, which is Amar Rava, and that might make sense because later on we quote Rava in the name of Rav Nachman. It would make sense, since Rava was a Talmud Mufach of Rav Nachman, that this whole sugya would be following, or the name that really should be here is Rava, not the Rabba. So we will use Rava. Amar Rava. Idamar le dirata. If he says, I sold you a dirata, kuli ama lo plige. Nobody argues debate mashma, that included in the word dirata, which is a living space, that includes the houses, because you don't live in the chatzer, you live in the houses, but the chatzer serves to enhance your living in the houses, but you actually live physically in the houses. And therefore, if you said dirata, it's clear, according to both the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer, that would have included the batim. Ki plige tamale darto. On the other hand, when it uses the Aramaic word darto, that's where we have a question. Marzavar tarbitza mashma. Rabbi Lezer believes that it just means the airspace, the milusa, or the avira, is what's intended by darta. The other says, no, the Chachamim say that the word darta is used in a similar vein to that of dirato, and therefore the word darta, even though in Aramaic it means a chatzer, but since you use darta, darta has the same meaning or takes on the same consideration of a dirato, and therefore it would subsume under it gam de batim, not just the chatzer. There is an alternative view of what Rava said over here. Amarava. Idamarle darto. If they use the Aramaic word darto, which is equivalent or synonymous with the chatzer, dukli hamalo plige de batim mashma. Everybody agrees that batim are included. Ki plige. Where do they argue? Damale chatzer. It uses the word chatzer itself. Marsava chatzer aviva mashma. Rabbi Lezer believes that chatzer means the airspace of the chatzer. Marsava ke chatzer hamishkan. On the other hand, the Chachamim believe that it's like the Chatzer HaMishkan. And over here you have two views within the Rishonim as to exactly what it means in Chatzer HaMishkan. You have the Rashbam who says that just like in the Chatzer HaMishkan, it included the Kodesh, the Kodesh HaKodeshim, the Ol Moed, which are similar to Batim. And the Pasuk calls all of that area, or included in that area, is the Chatzer. And so therefore you see subsumed in an area of the Chatzer are sub-areas that are Batim, and they are included in what is called a Chatzer. On the other hand, if you look at the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says, "Kechatzer mishkan, shalei sham lishka velo klum, ki mizbeach lechud." There was nothing in the chatzer, not a lishka, not anything else, just a mizbeach. And so it seems that the Rabbeinu Gershom sees the kechatzer mishkan not as being the other position, but rather an explanation for Rabbi Eliezer's position. Why does Rabbi Eliezer think that you only get the usage of the airspace utility of the chatzer? Because it's similar to the chatzer mishkan, which didn't have anything in it except the Mizbeach. And therefore, there were no houses. There's nothing there except the airspace of the Chatzer. And that's why he thinks that you only get the airspace of the Chatzer. Now, as the Rashbam points out over here, the nafgamina between the two lishonot of Rava is the following. That in the Lishna Kama of Rava, it says that if you said, Amalei Chatzer zo ani mocher lach, according to the first lishon, everybody would agree that and you did not sell the houses and you only sold the avira of the Chatzer. Even the Chachamim would agree in the first Lashon that the word Chatzer means Chatzer and no more than that, just Avira Shel Chatzer. Their Machloket revolves around the word Darta, and if you use the word Dirata, everybody would agree it would have included the houses. Their Machloket revolves around the word Darta. On the other hand, in the second Lashon of Rava, there everybody agrees both that Darta and Dirata mean that you include the houses. Their question revolves around the word Chatzer itself, as to whether that means the houses or does not mean the houses. Now, Amar Rav Nachman, machar lo chusit u'mitzula. He sold to him both chusit and a mitzula. The Rashbam over here says that the chusit is similar to the beta chusa'ot that we saw before in the Braita, which means it's referring to an area that has sand in it that's used or utilized to make glass, or it is bricks or stones that are used in the making of glass. Umitzula, over here, the Rashbam brings two possibilities as to what it means. Either it means karkiyat anar, means the base of the river, or the river bed, in which they were mining or panning for gold and other precious metals. So it was a sort of gold rush type of river bed. Or he brings an alternate explanation, that is that it was a fishing pond of some sort. It was a mitzula for a fishing net or a way to capture fish. And therefore it was a river or an area of water that was used for the capturing of fish. But either way, these are two unique areas that are found in the living spaces of individuals that could be in a chatzer, could be that they are sold separately. But what the Rava tells you in the name of Nachman is, Echzik b'chusit lo kana mitzula, Echzik b'mitzula lo kana chusit. That the taking possession of one of these two properties does not help you take possession of the other property. They are considered to be so distinct or unique that you have to make a kinyan on each one individually in order to acquire it. So over here, where you make an acquisition of one of them, that doesn't help you acquire the other property. Now the chazakah that we're speaking about here, as the Rashbam notes, is not the chazakah of 3 years, rather the chazakah that's mentioned in the Mishnah in Kiddushim, which is that you can be kone karka bekesef shtar v'chazakah. So the chazakah that we're speaking about here is that kinyan chazakah. That kinyan chazakah is only sufficient to acquire one of these items, will not help you with the other item, because they are considered to be completely separate, independent, or unique. Why says Zini, is that really true that when you have two pieces of property and you're machzik in one of them, you can't acquire the other? Didn't Shmuel say, Machar lo eser sadot beser midinot, We saw that in the Gemara in Kiddushin, as well as in Baba Kama, which is that if you sold him 10 fields in 10 different areas, 10 different states, 10 different countries, as soon as you take possession of one of the 10 properties, then you acquire all of the properties. Mar says, wait a minute. Over there, it's because the crust of the earth is all considered to be one location. Therefore, when you take possession of one item, you also take possession of all the other items. And in addition to that, they all have the same utility, or they are still all considered to be sadot, or fields, or areas, or tracts of land. So they all have a similar nature and name to them. So therefore, they have two things going in their favor. One is that they all are in the same location, meaning that they're connected by the underlying fact that they are all land that is on the face of the earth. And number two is that they're all utilized in the same way. Over here, each one of these items is used in an independent manner, in a differentiated manner, and therefore they are not considered to be one or one unit, and therefore they require a chazaka or an akinyan for each one separately. And there are those that say, just the opposite, that if you do take possession of one of these, it will help you to do acquire the other. Mar says, pshita, that's pretty straightforward. You have Shmuel's din, which says exactly the same thing. So what is Rabbi telling us that is newer chiddush over here? It says, that havamid would have been that over there, the face of the earth is all one singular unit. Over here, where each item is so unique or distinct, maybe you would not suffice to make a kinyan one to acquire the other. That it does work according to this second lashon. Now, the Rashbam over here quotes from the Gemara earlier by the case of the ger. By the case of the ger, we say where the ger passed away and his property was left and someone wanted to acquire it. They went into one of the fields and acquired it. We said that, well, they didn't necessarily acquire the other field if there was a meitzar that sat between them. So what's the difference between that case and the case of Shmuel? And so as the Rashbam points out, we noted this when we did the Gemara before, that the difference is the fact that over here, first of all, you have a dat makneh, which is someone is granting you ownership, not simply that you are acquiring the item. By the ger, you're taking it from hefker, and therefore you're acquiring it without anybody granting you ownership. In addition, the Gemara qualifies in Kiddushin and says that the case of Shmuel is a case where he paid money for all the fields. So over there, the money changed hands, and even though money is one of the mechanisms by which one can acquire real property, this is a case or a situation in which in those areas, the transaction is not finalized until there is a shtar or until you are machzik in it. So even though he gave the money, the transaction is not done, but since he gave money to acquire all the properties, and then was machzik in it, all these items together allow him to do one chazaka to help out with the other properties. That is, the money paid, plus the fact that sadan da arachadhu, they're all one tashmish, and the last thing is that it's a case we have a dat makneh. In the case of the ger who passed away, and then his stuff is hefger, you're missing a bunch of those items. Number one is you don't have a dat makneh. Number two is there's no money changing hands, so you can't say that he's paid for all the properties to take possession of them. They're tashmish tachad, they do have one utility, so that's the only saving grace, but that's not enough to allow you to acquire one property and then gain access or rights to the other properties. And here, by the case of Chutzit and Mitzulah, they do have the aspect of that you paid the money already. They do have the aspect of Dat Makneh, but they lack is Tashmish Tachadahi, that they have the same utility. And so that's the question in the Tulisho note of Rova as to whether that inhibits your ability to acquire one and then acquire the other, or that's not significant enough to block you from acquiring one and therefore acquiring the other.
Okay, the next Mishnah continues and says, a mocher beit abad, one who sells an olive press, machar et hayam, he sells with that the sea, veta memel, and the crusher, veta bitulot, and the maidens. Avalo machar, but not included that are eta virin, or you can see here there's an alternate gears on the oruch, eta achirin, veta galgal, and not the wheel, veta kura, and not the beam. Ubezman shamar lo hu v'cho ma shebetocho, if he uses a language that says he's selling the olive press and everything that's in it, hari kulan mechurin, all of these items that are enumerated here are sold with it. Once again, here, the mitaltalin are things that are utilized inside of the press. So any of these items that are utilized inside of the press would be included when he says chol ma shebetocho. Obviously, items not related to the press that are found inside of the olive press would not be included in the sale. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, a mocher beit abad, someone who sells an olive press, machar tekorah, for sure sold the beam. Now, first of all, the Rishbam over here explains that the list of items that we have in this Mishnah with regards to the olive press, the difference between the items that are included in the sale and those that are not included in the sale is the following. That all those items that are considered to be sold along with the olive press are fixed in place or are part and parcel of the olive press itself. Anything that was not sold along with the Beit HaBad is kazmitatalinhein. They are movable items. They might be used in the processing of the olives, but they're not items that are affixed to the ground or fixed in place, and that's why they are not sold along with the olive press. So first of all here, the Rashbam gives us some hint as to what the definition of the items are here with regards to the olive press, and that is that the list of items that are sold are affixed to the ground or fixed in place because of their weight, whereas the items that are not sold with it are metaltalin, things that are picked up, moved around, even though they might be part of the processing of the press, but it still doesn't mean that they're fixed in place because they can be moved out of here, they can be carried out of there. If you look at the end of the Balei HaTosafot here in Divrei Matkal Yam, he gives an alternate explanation based on the fact that the Rabbeinu Tam defined some of these terms in the Mishnah differently. He says that the reason for the things that are sold and are not sold is one of the following two reasons. Some of these items are just not significant enough. Since they are insignificant, when you sell the Beit HaBad, the olive press, these items come along with it because they're not considered to be significant, distinct enough to separate them out from this sale. Items that have a significance or distinct enough, they are not included in the sale. Inami, he offers another possibility as to what the difference in the list is, fish ein ovdim el lekach, that their sole purpose is to be used in the olive press. They have no other purpose besides being used in the olive press. They have no alternate utility, and therefore they are sold with the olive press because that's what they're for. But if these items have an alternate utility, then they would not be included in the sale of the olive press. So over here you have three different possibilities as to differentiating in the list what goes with the sale and what does not go with the sale. For the Rashbam, it's the difference between those items that are fixed and those items that are metaltalin. For the Balei HaTosafot, it's one of two reasons. Those things that are insignificant or batel, the gabei, the olive press, they are included. Those things that are significant enough or distinct, they are not sold with the olive press. Or the third possibility is items that are solely for the use in the olive press, those go with the olive press. Items that have multiple usages, they are not included in the sale of the olive press. Now, the Gemara is faced with the exact same problem that we are, which is how do you define the words in the Mishnah? They are living in Bavel. They are speaking Aramaic. The Mishnah is written in Tanaic Hebrew. And the Tanaic Hebrew belies a processing of olives that was done in Eretz Yisrael. So both the fact that the people in Bavel are not necessarily familiar or processing their olives in the exact same manner, as well as the fact that they're using terms in Hebrew which may not be familiar to them. So the Gemara now is going to translate the words in the Mishnah from the Hebrew to the Aramaic. The same way that we are trying to grasp at what these words mean in the Mishnah, the Gemara is faced with that same challenge and does the same thing over here. It takes the words and then translates them into Aramaic, trying to make sense of what is happening or being explained in the Mishnah. Now the Rashbam over here claims that the pressing of olives in their day went through three stages. Again, a lot of this will be connected to the local practices as well as the time period in which it happened. But the Rashbam claims that there were three major processes. There was a crushing process, which at first they crushed the olives. After that, they milled the olives. And the last thing they did was press the olives. So the olives went through these three stages. And the items here that I mentioned in the Mishnah are associated with those different stages. The crushing stage, which is up front. Then the rechayim, the milling of the olives. And then lastly, the pressing of the olives. And now we're going to go through these items in the Gemara and see what they are. Where it says, yam is tlafcha. That the yam that's mentioned, the sea that is mentioned, that's included with the olive press is tlafcha. Tlafcha is both Rashbam and the Balei HaTosafot note is adashim. It means a lentil. So as far as a lentil is describing the shape of the item, just like lentils are round, the item that we're speaking about here is a round sea. The question is, what does taflecha mean? The Rashbam says taflecha is areva shekarin mait agula kadasha. It is some sort of trough or collection area in which the olives are put in order to crush them or to press the olives. It is a piece that is fixed inside of the olive press, in which you do the processing of the olives. And it's some sort of basin that allows the olives to be placed in it. And then after they are crushed, they are milled, or they are pressed, the oil that comes out of them then drains out of this yam, out of this tlafcha, And that's when they collect it in the boar that collects the olive oil that comes out of it. So according to them, this is a mainstay of the olive processing. It's the basin in which the olives are placed for these different parts of the process in which they are processing the olives. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot disagree based on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, but they say that the Rashbam's Perush over here follows that of Rashi in Avodah Zarah. But for fundamental reasons, the Balei Tosafot believe that that's the incorrect explanation. And therefore, they believe that the Adashim are really circular pieces of plaster or cement circles that were made in order to be placed on top of the olives. When they pressed the olives, these items were placed on top of it, and they were used to press down on the olives. And that's what this yam is. The yam is not a collection basin, but rather it's adashim, it's circular in nature, and that circle is placed on top of the olives in order to press on the olives. And that's one of the reasons that the Balei Tosafot had come up with a different reason than the Rashbam for the distinctions made in the Mishnah, because according to him, these items are metaltalin. These items are movable objects that you can take and you put on and off of the olives, and therefore they should not be included in the list of items sold with the olive press. That's why they offer the two alternatives that they did, which is that the possibility, either because they're batel to the gabei the olive press, or that their sole utility was for the pressing or crushing of the olives. So that is the first item that was mentioned in our Mishnah that is included in the sale, is the yam, is the tlafcha. The next thing mentioned in the Mishnah is the memel. Amar Rabbi Amma bar memel mefarchata. So it's interesting that Rabbi Amma bar memel was the one who described what the memel was, but he says it's mefarchata, which is a crusher. The Rashbam here brings two possible explanations as to what the mefarchata is, this crusher. Either he says in the second explanation, it's etz atzmo shemefarchim bo et hazeitim. It is a piece of wood which is used as a pestle to smash or crush the olives that are there. So the olives are kept in some sort of basin, and then you take this wood or piece of wood that is the equivalent of a buchna or a pestle, and you crush the olives with it. He does not favor that explanation, but rather favors the first explanation, which is that it is even nikuva. It is a stone that has a hole in it. Shemachnisim ba'etz, that you put a piece of wood on it. Umefarchim ba'et zeitim, and then with that, you crush the zeitim. So it's not clear from here what he means. Does he mean that it is the mortar itself, which is that it's a stone that has a hole in it, and the stone that has the hole in it is where you place the olives that get crushed, and then you take the wood and you press it into the area where the olives are, and that's what creates the crushing of the olives? Does it mean that there is a stone that has some sort of hole in it? You put the wood into the hole, and then you use that as the crusher, as the pestle to crush the olives? Or, in my mind, I think of many of the archaeological sites here in Israel where they have olive presses, and there you can see that there is this round, circular basin that you put the olives in. In the middle, there is a place where you could stand up a piece of wood, and then they would have a perpendicular piece of wood that would then connect through a wheel, a stone wheel, and then you would walk around with that stone wheel, and that would crush the olives underneath. So the Rashbam could be referencing to either the mortar or the base in which the olives sat, and the wood that goes into the middle that allows you to put the wheel around it. Or he could be referencing to the wheel itself that is used to crush the olives, which has a hole in it, and you put a piece of wood in it, and you move it around. But the common denominator between all of those explanations is this is something that's used to crush the olives. It's something heavy or a pounding mechanism that is used to crush the olives. Bitulot, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, klunasot shel erez, shemamidim behem et hakorah. The bitulot, the maidens, are these cedar posts which support the korah, which is large beam. So here, in terms of the pressing of olives, if you go to my website, you can see again, I put some of the pictures up there from the olive presses that were found in Eretz Yisrael and the different parts of the process. But one of the big parts of the pressing of the olives was the final stage in which they used to press the olives. The weight that was used to press the olives was called a korah, which was this massive beam that was hooked up to a fulcrum and then was pressed down or weighted on the olives themselves to press the olives. So the klunasot that are being described here, according to the Rashbam, the hinge upon which the korah was connected to the wall and was allowed to be raised and dropped, meaning that the korah was affixed to the wall by having a pin that went through the middle of the korah. It was attached to these two cedar posts, and that allowed you to then lift and put the korah down. because on the side that was attached to the wall, it was on this hinge or fulcrum that allowed you to raise it and bring it down. On the other hand, some others describe them as being posts in the middle of the beam, similar to what I described before, that the korah is attached to the wall, but in the middle, there are these guide posts that allow you to raise and bring the korah down, but keeps it on a track or a straight up and down in order that it presses exactly where you want it. So that is what it's referencing to here in terms of these klunasot, that these are these betulot. The Rashbam over here describes them as being either yazmilin in French, which is twins, because they were identical posts on each side that held up the korah, or he says they were called soros, or sisters, from the word that we know today, like sorority, that it means sisters or paired items here, because they were on both sides of the korah that allowed you to raise and drop the korah. Avirin, or achirin, which we saw in the Mishnah, the Gemara says, are kivshei. They are the pressers. These are part of the pressing process. Now, the korah, which was this big or heavy beam, had a certain width to it, but it was not wide enough to press all the olives that were underneath it. So what they did to have the weight be evenly distributed underneath the korah is that they used to put pieces of wood or some sort of flat structure upon which the korah would press, and this would distribute the weight across all of the olives that were underneath. So these achirin or avirin are these beams or items that sit on top. Tosafot before described them as being those circles of teeth that were used to crush or place on top of the olives, even without the korah. These are similar types of items that are placed underneath the korah that allow you to distribute or press on the olives that are underneath. The Rashbam Lashitato notes that they're not included in the sale because they're metalkalin. They can be taken out of the olive press or going to the Balei Tosafot. Maybe they have purposes somewhere else, not just uniquely in the olive press. Galgal, the wheel, is chumrata. In essence, it is some sort of pulley system or screw system that allows you to raise and lower the korah. The korah is extremely heavy, especially if it had other weights, stones that were tied onto it to make it even heavier. And so no person could actually lift the korah up because given how much weight it had on it, to insert the olives or place the olives under the korah, you had to raise it. So how did you raise it? So you use this galgalta, this wheel, which is either a pulley system that allows you to raise and drop the korah, or it's a wheel on the korah that runs along the korah itself, and you could move it from closer to the fulcrum to further away from the fulcrum, and the further away it moved from the fulcrum, the heavier the korah get it, and the less likely you could lift it. The more you moved it closer to the fulcrum, it gave you the ability to raise the korah. Or it was some sort of screw that had a galgal, had a handle, or some sort of circular motion that allowed you to turn it, that allowed you to raise or drop the korah, or press down with the korah on top of the olives that are being pressed. But again, here, this is something that was separate or distinct from the korah itself, or from the press itself. Could be used in other places, or was mitaltel. And for all of those reasons, it's not included in the sale. Korah, the Gemara says, korah. The korah that's mentioned in the Mishnah, that we're familiar with, that is the korah, that's the same thing that we call it, which is that large beam that is used in the pressing of the olives. Tan Rabbanan, we bring a braita that gives us some other items that are included or excluded from the sale of the olive press. The braita has some similar items to the Mishnah, and adds in some other items that are not mentioned in the Mishnah. Hamucher beit abad, macharet and nissarim, he who sells along with it the boards. Now, as the Rashbam points out over here, these can't be the same boards that we were speaking about before, which were placed under the korah to press down on the olives, because our Mishnah says that they're not sold with the beit abad, yet these nissarim are sold with the beit abad, and so therefore the Rashbam says the nissarim that are mentioned over here are boards, or some sort of structure that was placed around the olives to stop them from dispersing when the korah was pressed on them, which is that when you press weight or the korah on top of the olives, by nature of the pressure or force being put on them, would want to move or split away from the pressure that's being placed on them, and they would slide out to the sides. So in order to keep them internally and to force them to be under the weight of the korah, they used to create these nisarim, these boards, or some sort of perimeter around the olives that didn't allow them to spread. And the Rashbam equates it to a terminology that we see in other places in Shas, which is called zakal beit abad, which is some sort of netting baskets or strings that they put the olives in order to hold them in place while they were being pressed by the korah, or the weight that was being placed on them. And so he says it's very similar to those nettings or baskets in which the olives were placed for their pressing. So too, they had boards that went around them to keep them confined when they were being pressed. And so those are included in the sale of the Beit Abad. Hayikavim. Now, the way that the Rashbam reads it, that is the equivalent to the yam that we mentioned before. It's yam hachakuka. It's a yam that is carved into the bedrock. Vasui ke'en yekev. And it's made like a press, meaning that it is circular in nature. You place the olives inside of it, and then you press them or do whatever you're doing to them, crushing them inside of this item. And so he says yekev is synonymous with the yam that we saw above. Here again, the Rabbeinu Tam disagrees, and he brings the perush of the Aruch that the yekevim are salim, hamevin bo zeitim. Those are the baskets in which you bring the olives to the olive press. And again, that's why the Rabbeinu Tam can't say things that are metaltel are not included in the sale, because he's saying here the baskets are included in the sale. So you have to say that these baskets were either so insignificant that they were batel to the olive press and were included, or that they were only used for bringing olives to the olive press, and that's why they were included in this sale. Veta mefarchot, and the crushers, that's the equivalent of the memel or the mefarchata that we saw above. Veta rechaim hatachtona, and the bottom millstone, and this is where the Rashbam lays out the different stages of the processing of the olives, that first they crushed them, then they milled them, and then they pressed them. And so this is this interim stage of the milling, which is the lower millstone. That area was affixed or built into the bedrock of the Beit Abad, and therefore it's included in the sale. This could be referencing if the mifacharta above is not like I described, but you see those wheels in the archaeological digs, that could be referencing the Rechaim HaTachtona, those circular bases that you find even when you're walking through the old city towards the Kotel and the Rova. You can see there a number of them that are placed there, these circular bases in which the olives were kept. That could be the Rechaim HaTachtona, Avalo El Yonah, and not the upper one. So either the upper millstone or over here, that would be the wheel that goes around it, because that's something that is removable. Those items are not included in the sale. Ubizman Shamarlo Hu V'chol Ma Shebitocho. Again, if he uses language that says it and everything that's inside of it, are ikulan michurin. All of these items are included in the sale because these are all items that are utilized for the pressing of the olives. Benkach or benkach, no matter what language he uses, whether he says, I'm selling you the olive press, or I'm selling you the olive press and everything in it, lo machar, lo eta avirin, he does not include in that the avirin. Those are the items that were mentioned in the Mishnah, the avirin or achirin that are not included, which we said were the pieces of wood or items that were placed to distribute the pressure of the korah on the olives. Lo eta sakin, and not the sacks that are made out of hair. Lo eta martufim, and not the sacks that are made out of leather. Even though they are utilized and they are used for the olives or bringing the olives, but they're not uniquely suited for that, and they would not necessarily be defined by the olive press itself. And therefore, they're not included in this sale. Lezer omer, mocher beit abad, machar et korah. Lezer, like in our Mishnah, says that if you sell an olive press, you also sell the korah, that beam that goes along with it. Shono nekra beit abad, el al shum korah. The only reason it's called an olive press is because of the press. And the item that creates the press is this huge beam that goes across. So it's an essential item, or it is, by the definition, what the press is. And so therefore, if you say an olive press, of course you include the korah, and not like the Tanakhama, who believes that the korah is excluded from such a sale. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Samach Zainum Bet, and we'll continue tomorrow with more Mishnayot that are taking items and trying to describe to us what's included in a sale of such an item or such a statement by the seller.